Welcome to episode 106 of Practical Defense, Mailbag. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Haddix. This week, we're dipping into the mailbag. Now, this is only a portion of the emails that I've received. Some folks didn't get back to me when I asked if I could read their emails on the air, and that's a point I really want to make. You need to give me explicit permission to read your message on the air, otherwise I won't. It's not for any legal reasons. It's that sometimes people would rather keep their correspondence private, or they don't want to be named on a public show. So unless you tell me specifically that you want your email to be included in a show, I will assume you want it kept private. So in your message, include something like, you may use this email on your show, and then tell me what you want to be called. Again, I have people say that I can use the email, but they would rather remain anonymous. Now, by default, I will use your first name and the city or country where you're from, if you tell me. Now, for example, I would be Alex from Los Angeles. Now, the most common question I receive, of course, is how do I choose a martial art or a studio to train in or an instructor? That's why I devoted an entire episode to that subject, and that would be episode 102. Another really common question I get is, do you ever run out of ideas for topics? You know, when I first started the show back in 2007, I was actually concerned that I would run out of things to talk about. You know, what if I finished? How long would the show go? How would I end the show? The unfortunate answer is, there is no lack of content. Now I say unfortunately because there's always some sort of scam, some sort of new crime out there that people need to be made aware of. It keeps the subject going, but it's unfortunate that we have to deal with it. I mean, heck, this is episode 106. That means I've covered over 100 specific topics. That's a lot of stuff to be aware of. Also, I get a lot of emails daily with listeners asking me to cover various topics and suggesting tips of their own. So to keep all this information straight, I keep a spreadsheet of topics for episodes. When I get a new idea or when someone suggests a good topic, I open up the sheet and just add it to the list. Then when I sit down each week to create an episode, I just go to the list and pick one to talk about. So how do I choose from this list? It's purely subjective. It depends upon the time of year, what's going on in the world, how many requests I've had for that particular topic, how much research will it take, how much time do I have, and most importantly, really what I feel like talking about that week. I have so much material stacked up, I could probably move to a daily quick tip and still be good for an entire year. I just don't have the time to do a daily show, and my wife would probably divorce me. So with that happy thought, we'll move on to the listener-submitted comments, tips, and suggestions. Our first email is from Jennifer. She doesn't say where she's from, but based upon her spelling, I would say she's from someplace that speaks the Queen's English, which narrows it down to any place but the United States. She writes, "Your last tip on replacing the batteries was a great one. A few weeks ago, I had replaced all the batteries in my backup flashlights and my radio. Last weekend, the power went out due to a particularly intense electrical storm. The power in my neighborhood stayed down for almost 24 hours. Some neighborhoods were out for 3 or 4 days. But thanks to my fresh batteries and those few alert neighbors, we were safe and well informed during the aftermath, and we were able to patrol the complex, making sure that others were okay during the affected night. Keep up the good work." Thanks, Jennifer. The thing about preparedness is that when you need something in a crisis, you really need it. If you have it, it's the best feeling in the world. If you don't, you kick yourself for not thinking about it. You obviously thought about the environment in which you live and properly prepared yourself. You were not only able to protect yourself, but help others in your community as well. And that is absolutely fantastic. Now, skipping off into a tangent here, you also need to be careful in your generosity. If the situation were more dire or stretched out for more than a few days, the people that had adequately prepared might be preyed upon by those who didn't. But hey, that's a topic for a future episode, and I actually just added it to the list. So well done, Jennifer, and thanks for sending that in. Our next email is from Larry, who lives in Orlando, Florida, but he was originally from the Ukraine, so his English is a second language. Just recently, I went across your podcast and started listening to it from the beginning. I'm at episode 30 now. But anyway, I took small circle jiu-jitsu, and one of the classes was outside at a parking lot where we practice against carjacking, and one of the habits I got out of it is when coming close to your car, keep your key like you're going to open the door, and that way you'll be ready with a weapon in your hand. I do this all the time. Like your podcast very much. Thank you. And thanks to you, Larry. Now he brings up a great point, pun intended. Anything hard or sharp can be used as a defensive weapon, and keys are great. Everyone has them. They're not illegal to carry. And they can do some serious damage if used properly. If they're attached to a keychain stick, like a kubaton, the keys can even be used as a flail. Now, just to be clear, whether you use your fists, keys, a kubaton, a baseball bat, or a gun, the same rules for the use of force ladder, or use of force continuum, apply. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go back and listen to episode 7. I spend 23 minutes going over the key concepts to help you stay out of trouble when defending yourself. Also, you should not modify old keys to make them weapons. Police and the courts really look down upon this. Normal objects that are modified to hide the fact that they're weapons are often treated more harshly by the courts than your off-the-shelf knives. A defensive weapon of opportunity, like the house keys in your pocket, is very different than keys sharpened to points that would never work in locks. Don't do it. One makes you look like an average innocent citizen, and the other makes you look like an inmate with a jail cell shiv. Now, which person do you want to be portrayed as when you stand before a judge? Okay, on to Greg from Connecticut. Thank you for your Practical Defense podcast. I really enjoy it. I wanted to comment on episode 92, Elevators. You make a good point on taking control of the buttons. I've always moved to the back of the elevator so that my back was not to anyone and I could keep my eye on the other passengers. I think the only thing I would suggest is putting your back to the sidewall in front of the buttons, if possible. If this is not available, I try to use the reflective surfaces as a mirror to see other passengers, or like you said, wait for the next car or get off and take the next one. Thanks again. Thank you, Greg. Those are some great tips, and I really don't have anything to add. I'm not going to read a specific email on this one, as I have received so many emails on this subject. And I've touched upon this in the previous episodes, but I still occasionally get messages about this. And maybe I'll put it into another video episode. That one went on a list. What I'm talking about here are fraudulent bank alerts. What happens is that scam artists send out PayPal and bank alerts to random email addresses across the world. They alert you that there's some error in your account. Sometimes they pose as a fraud alert, or even tell you that your account has been hacked. Your account and all the assets will be frozen unless you click on this link provided and verify your account information. When you click on the link, it takes you to a site that looks identical in every way to the institution you expect to see. You enter your account information, and then it tells you everything's fine now. Thank you very much. What's actually happening is that this is an identity theft site. The server can be hosted anywhere in the world, so it's not any one particular country or type. It is an exact replica of the legitimate bank site. You can't tell the difference. Side by side, identical. However, all it does is record the information that you enter. It presents you with dialog boxes asking for your username, your password, your account number, your security code, your date of birth, your social security number, all these types of things under the guise of verifying that you are who you claim to be. And what it's doing is collecting and recording all of the information into their database. It's building a profile on you with the information that you are giving it. So PayPal is the biggest target for this type of identity theft. I've also received this type of phishing spam from Chase Manhattan Bank, Wells Fargo, Citibank, banks in Europe and China that I've never heard of. These crooks craft very scary email messages and send them out to millions of email addresses worldwide. If 1% of the recipients fill out that form, they make a huge amount of money. And this method is called phishing, and it's spelled with a PH rather than an F. The analogy is that they throw out a few million email hooks, hoping to land a few unwary fish. So how do you identify these types of email messages? First off, a legitimate email will name you specifically. Phishing messages use generic identifiers like account holder or customer. Legitimate messages will call you by your first real name and last name. They have your account information, so they know who you are. If you don't have an account with a bank, it's probably fraud. Now, I have to tread carefully on this one, because yes, if you didn't set up an account with that bank, it's probably a fraud phishing spam message. However, in these days of identity theft, someone could have set up a bank account in your name and left you to account for it. So the water gets a little murky on this one. I'll go over how to protect yourself in a minute or so. All right, the third thing. You should be the only person on the distribution list. If there are other people listed on the message, it's fraud. The bank will not send bulk account fraud alerts out. And the fourth item is to look at the link in the message. If it's super long, it could be fraud. Sometimes the crooks can hide the actual link in code, so the link itself is not a great indicator. They can make the link look legitimate, but actually direct you to a fraud site. And yes, before I get a ton of emails, I know there are ways to check the links out, but I'm not going to go into that level of detail here. So how do you protect yourself? There is no way to completely block these email messages. Spam filters can keep a lot of them out, but a few will always make it through. But here are some things that you can do when you receive these types of messages. First, be suspicious of any email alert message. If it's important, most banks will call you, not send an email. The exception to this might be PayPal. Second, never click on any link in any email message. Let me repeat that. Never click on any link in any email message. I don't care who it's from. Clicking links is a risky business. And honestly, I don't click on links sent by my own mother. I can pass on the occasional funny video or goofy picture for security. Third, always open your browser and type in the bank's address by hand or load it from a bookmark. Do not click on the link. Did I say that already? I think I did, but I'll say it again. Do not click on the link. Four, if you have a question, call the bank. Do not use any number provided in the email message. Go to your membership card and call the customer service number on the back of your card. This also applies to any phone message you might get. Don't call the number listed in the message. You dial a number from a source that you know is good, which is the back of the card. And fifth, don't trust email alerts. And hopefully, those tips will help keep you a lot safer when it comes to fraudulent emails. The last email that I'm going to read is from Etienne in the Netherlands. Now, Etienne has been with us from the very beginning. He writes, "Just listen to your latest quick tip," and I think he means episode 96. "Many years ago, I tried to be very aware. I was on a subway and was being very aware of where I was, the movement of the vehicle, the people and noises around me, and my position in all of this. I thought I was doing pretty well, but I missed my stop and had to take another subway back. This is the only time this has ever happened to me. Maybe I was too aware as well. I guess if you focus too much on the small things, you lose sight of the big picture if you're not careful." And that's exactly it. Focusing on the small things is not awareness. What Etienne was doing in his awareness exercise was jumping from item to item and scrutinizing each. You know, that's fine, but it's not what awareness really is. As he said, you lose sight of the big picture, which is why he missed his stop. Awareness is passive and includes the big picture. In early practice, you might start by jumping focus from item to item, like noise, to the breeze, to the warmth of the light. But what you need to do is you need to keep that attention to detail, but pull back so that you start to pick up more items. It's not easy, and it takes a lot of practice. For those that really want to hone their awareness skill, I suggest looking into insight meditation. In Pali, it's called Vipassana. It's a real eye-opener. For those that got the joke, thank you. So that'll do it for this week. Now again, I've received a ton of other fantastic emails, and some of them I'm going to break into full episodes on their own. But also, If I don't get your explicit permission, I won't be able to read your email on the show and give you credit. So if you want to hear your email on the air, let me know that it's okay to do so.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Since this was a mailbag episode, we don't have a summary this week. And as always, don't forget to check out my monthly column on taekwondotimes.com. It's called Raising Awareness. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddicts.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe. Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddicts.com. That's podcast@alexaddicts.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexaddicts.com.